after being here and working with young kids that pre-college, I realized that there was a sense of wonder in younger students that college kids just usually don't have.
Hello and welcome back to the Jarcast. I'm your host, Lucy.
And Jack. And today we have a very special guest, Mr. Henriquez. Mr. Henriquez, where did you grow up and what was your life like as a child?
Despite my last name, I grew up in Mississippi. So I spent most of my life until moving here in Jackson, which is the capital.
What were you like as a kid growing up? Do you play a lot of piano? You don't remember?
I don't remember what I was like as a child. I should probably ask my parents. That would not be a good thing either. I was very inquisitive. I wanted to know things all the time. I hated, absolutely hated with a passion, piano lessons. Hated it. Which I think is most people's experience with piano. I watched my sister play. She's 5 years older than I am. And told my parents that I wanted to be able to do that. And what they heard me say was, I want to take lessons. And what I meant was, I just want to be able to do it, not learn how to do it. And so they signed me up for lessons with Miss Rollins, who was probably 70-something years old when she taught me. And she was old school, wooden ruler old school, like slapped the back of your hands. And that didn't work very well. So I didn't practice. I didn't get any better. So,
That's how it usually goes.
So at what point in your life did you fully develop into the skillful pianist that you are today?
I will let you know when I get there.
Okay. No, you're being humble. Well,
around seventh grade, my parents decided that I wasn't getting any better, and so they weren't going to pay for lessons anymore, so they made me quit. And that year, I fell in love with it somehow, just the convergence of different things, and started to play on my own, and I started to find pieces that I liked. I liked movie soundtracks, and so I would play those by ear. The Beatles, I would play that by ear. And then slowly spent more and more time at the piano until it was time to figure out what to do at college. And it turned out to be piano.
And where did you go to college?
Mississippi College. It's a Baptist, private Baptist school in Mississippi.
Did you have any professors or teachers there that made an impact on you?
I did. I had a lot. Before college, I had my AP English teacher my senior year. Was a man named Mr. Avalon, who unfortunately recently passed away. He looked like Kurt Vonnegut. So you know what Kurt Vonnegut looks like?
How do you spell that?
How do you spell it? V-O-N-N-E-G-U-T, maybe? And I think that he kind of looked just a little bit more rotund than that, but he looked like Kurt Vonnegut. I think he did it on purpose. And he was... he was the first teacher to teach me that something can have value, art can have value in and of itself. So he was teaching AP literature. When we read D.H. Lawrence and Kafka and all the things. And before then, it had always been, you know, you read this to become a better reader, or you play this instrument to make you better at math, or, you know, there's always some other end other than just the art itself. And he was the first one that said, no, the art itself is the goal. I didn't get that till my senior year in high school. And then when I was in college, my primary piano teacher, Dr. Willoughby, taught me that it was the best thing to ask questions. And she did it with reverse psychology. I would ask a question, and she would say, don't ever ask that ever again. And then she'd say, you know, if you want to know more about that, go to the library and look it up. And so I did. And then I learned that asking questions is a lot of fun, and then finding answers is even more fun.
Yeah. What is the best part of studying music, and what is the worst part? You majored in composition?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The best part and the worst part?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the same.
Really?
And it's that you never know it all.
Mm.
You never get to a point where there's nothing else that you can do. That's the worst thing, because you never feel satisfied with your progress. And on bad nights, you know, you stay awake at night going, I'm terrible at this. Everybody's going to find out soon that I'm not any good. No. But the best part of that is also the same thing, in this, that you don't ever get bored with it. There's always something else to learn. Even teaching pieces of music here, every year I learn something new about the works that the kids study.
Mm.
Because there's something else there.
And has teaching music given you, like, a different outlook on life, or is there a reflection of that in the things that you do, or where you realize this is sort of like making music where it can never be perfect?
I think so. There is a kind of a balance of how much do we want to keep polishing this until a point where it's clean but lifeless, and how much are we willing to accept to say something that's dirty but vivacious, you know. That happened in piano a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, yeah, there's a give and take to it.
Yeah. How did you come to work at ACA?
that one's a funny one. So I graduated with my master's degree in 2014, and my goal had always been to get my doctorate and teach at the college level. If you were to go back in time and tell me that I would be teaching K through 12 and loving it, I would have laughed heartily at that. Because I always thought college was where it was at, and I was going to teach college. So I was accepted into University of Georgia's musicology program. And so my wife and I moved out here in the summer of 2014. She had taken a full-time job working for a ministry in Alpharetta, and I was just going to be a student until I was done, and then we would go make boatloads of money with me being a music teacher. That was the plan. And then I decided that I needed to find some part-time work, so I started looking online for music jobs and came across this public school that needed a music teacher. And I said, oh, I know about music teachers in public schools. That's a part-time job, because they'll probably just meet twice a week. And I can do that. And so I put in my resume, and the next thing I know, Dr. Moore has called me and says, well, we'd like to interview you, but you should know up front that this is not part-time. This is a full-time position. You'd be working the entire school day, every day of the week. And I said, oh. He said, would you maybe be willing to put your PhD on hold for a year while you maybe help us get started and all that? I said, sure. And that was 2014. Here I am.
So you never got that PhD?
I did not. Kids pre-college realized that there was a sense of wonder in younger students that college kids just usually don't have. And that if you're trying to teach beauty, especially beauty in music, and the first time they're hearing it is in college, it's probably too late. And if you get them when they're young, then you know that they it's already ingrained in them to be open to the beauty of things. And that's kind of like, well, this is a lot more fulfilling than I think college would have been.
Well, I was thinking about, in preparation for this interview, memories I have from your class. And one of the ones that stuck out was when you told us that our great, great, great grand teacher was Beethoven. Was Beethoven? It stuck out.
That's right.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah.
I know.
So going off of that, if you could go back in time and meet any historically famous or even modern composer, who would it be and why?
Historically, I think I would go with Franz Haydn, Joseph Haydn. One, because most composers have a reputation of not being too terribly nice. Haydn had a reputation of being a really nice guy. Everybody loved him. He loved practical jokes, loved to tell jokes. That comes through in his music, and he just seemed like a fun person to hang around. He also had for composers, he had a pretty boring life. He got hired in a prince's palace when he was 30 and worked there for 30 years. I mean, you know, and you tell kids that, and they say, well, that's awful. No, it was wonderful. He was stable. He got married. He had a nice long career. And, well, now his portrait hangs in my classroom. So, you know, he wasn't after fame. He wasn't after greatness. He was just a man doing his job. And, well, history decided that what he did was very important. And I think it would be fun to meet him. Mm. And then somebody that's living, I would love to meet John Williams. But, you know, everybody wants to meet John Williams.
What is your favorite class to teach? Because you teach a wide variety.
Yeah, y'all asked me that, and I was thinking, how do I answer this without getting in trouble? I don't know. Every class has its moments where I just think, yes, this is great, and then every class has its moments where I think, what am I doing? This is terrible. This is awful. But any class where I can sense the light bulb going off on a student where they think, this is amazing, this is wonderful, or they make some connection that I've been trying to hint at to get them to draw, any class where that happens, that's going to be my favorite class for that day. Mm. Yeah. But I do love teaching piano. It's fun.
Well, yeah. Do y'all still play the xylophones? And the glockenspiels?
I think Mr. Lusk does. Okay. He has them in his room. Okay. Yeah. So, y'all had fun with that.
Yeah, we did.
A little too much fun sometimes.
Yeah. I think so.
Do you not remember?
I remember.
That was a good time.
You weren't allowed to step over them. That's what I remember. And I did that one too many times. Tell us about your trips to Europe.
Well, I did get to go. So in my teacher lineage, I just made air quotes for those of you who are. That's how adept I am at this whole podcast thing. my teacher lineage, we've got several big composers and performers, and my teacher's teacher's teacher was a Hungarian pianist composer by the name of Ernst von Dohnányi. And he has a very interesting story, a very interesting life. We actually got to take a trip to Austria, where he worked in this really small village that today is still very small. And we performed in the church where he was organist, and we performed nothing but his music. And that was real special because he died in 1960 or 1961. And so there were people in the audience who remembered him. They knew him as small children. That was a real fulfilling trip to be able to go there. Then we got to tour all these wonderful places. My wife and I have gone back a couple of times. And it's so interesting because Europe has such a long history, and so much that we study here has its genesis in Europe, that it's great to see, it's great to stand in, say, a palace that a composer worked in. Great to see a work of art that you've only seen in print in a book and be face to face with it. One day we will go back, but I don't know when that will be. Mm.
Yeah, that's cool. And then Mr. Franklin told me that you almost got to go to Switzerland for something. I'm not quite sure.
there's a growing movement in the music world right now. One of the biggest areas of research is in what's called Partimento. And Partimento, it's kind of like a lead sheet, and it's what students from the 18th and 19th centuries would have been taught. That's how they were taught music. And so a lot of times people are often astounded by how quickly a composer could compose or how they came up with all the ideas they did. And it's because they were drilled on this method over and over and over again. Well, it was forgotten for a while, and now there's a resurgence in it. And so a lot of people are now writing books about it and coming up with different courses to teach based around it. And there is a school in Switzerland that has some of the leading teachers, and I was going to go there and be a part of that. They decided instead to do it over Zoom, which you're shaking your head. It was not that great, but I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was just over Zoom.
Yeah.
But the great thing is that it allowed us to connect. We connected with people in every continent. There was somebody on the Zoom call. There were people that were up at 3 o'clock in the morning taking these classes. And now we're all connected and we still converse through email and get together and improvise and talk about each other's compositions. So it ended up being a really cool thing. But one day, hopefully they will get us back over there. We could actually be there in Switzerland for the event.
That's why I was shaking my head, because I'd just be devastated if I was going to go to Switzerland and they're like, well, lockdown. So
yeah, instead of the mountains, I was staring out my back window.
One of these days.
Yeah.
So I've been told by a couple students when I told them we were gonna be doing this interview, they said you should ask them about baking. So I had no clue about this either. Can you tell us a little bit about your story with baking and that passion?
Yeah, so when I was in college, it was get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and do music until 10 o'clock at night every day. And while I loved it at the time, I had a teacher tell me, you need to find a hobby that's not musically related or you're going to burn yourself out and you're going to hate it. And so that was at the end of the school year, and I had the summer to kind of play around with different things. And I don't remember how, but I fell in love with cooking. And I think I did because it appealed to my musical side. There's some parallels between cooking and baking and composing and playing instruments. So I started to cook, and I cooked for the family, and then started to bake and make bread and that sort of thing. Then when I got out of college, I realized that if you only have one music degree, they don't let you do music for a living. You have to have more than one, or you have to be super attractive, and that wasn't gonna go that route. So I just started to try to find other jobs, and like most fine arts majors, I ended up in the food and hospitality industry, and eventually ended up working for Gigi's Cupcakes, because I wanted to open my own chocolate shop. I had done some work and trained as a chocolatier, and I wanted to get kind of my feet wet on how to run something on an industrial level, baking 1,000 cupcakes every day, 6 days a week, to figure out like what kinds of ovens you need, what kinds of mixers you need, you know. And then we were going to open up our own chocolate shop. That did not happen. I ended up going back to grad school for music because I didn't learn my lesson. But yeah, that's how I got started. And then it kind of became a hobby again. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
What is training to be a chocolatier like?
It is awful. You spend all of your time with melted chocolate.
Man.
Yeah,
it's all there, but you can't eat it. So was it the Gigi's Cupcakes that's on Peachtree?
No, it's all a franchise, and this one was back in Mississippi.
Oh, right, I forget their franchise. Because there was one over where I used to live, and so I thought...
Oh, yeah?
Maybe that was the one.
No.
It's not.
In fact, I don't even know that one was open when I worked there. I think that was a new one. Everybody says that must have been the greatest job ever because you bake cupcakes. And I always tell people, Yeah. When you think of baking cupcakes, you're thinking of Saturday with your dog around your feet and favorite movie on in the background. No, this was 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 days a week in a windowless kitchen, 1,000 cupcakes a day, jeez, made the same way every time. No deviation. Mm. It was,
well, at least you got good at it, right?
I hope I did.
Yeah. Do you still like to cook a lot today?
I do. That's kind of one of my main jobs as husband and father, is to cook. So, yeah, I'm in charge of the kitchen most days.
Now, you just mentioned father.
I did.
Some of you may not know, but Mr. Enriquez is pregnant.
I am.
not. That's how you say it, right?
Mr. Like Enriquez is already a father.
Oh, wait. Why don't just tell us about your child?
Yes, I am not with child. My wife was with child, and okay, now we have the child.
I mean, now so you have had with it. Child. We have got with it. The child, okay, but not yeah, with child.
Is that how you would say, just for my own peace of mind, if a couple is pregnant, don't you say that, right? Or is it always...
Like, you're pregnant.
Yeah.
I think I know what you say. We hear people say things like, we're pregnant.
Right.
But then you also hear people correct that and say, no, just... the father is not pregnant.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter. I just...
It's
still wrong, no matter what.
Yeah, because family has recently had a new addition.
There you go. Yes, little Sophia Christine. She was born on November 18th in 2022, very early in the morning. And so far, so good. She eats a lot and sleeps a lot. Cries very little, which is good. We haven't had to, enforce any curfews yet or anything like that. No dress code.
Right.
So, so far, she's a good kid. Yep.
Wow. That's exciting.
Better than most people, I think, when they have a kid. So, there's hope.
Well, but I keep hearing that there will be another shoe to drop. That's what everybody tells me.
I think it's the toddler stage. When they can walk and run is when they become problems.
Yeah. We would joke that we ordered a child that would come out fully potty trained and speaking proper English and all that. But that didn't happen.
Awesome.
It would be.
Already playing the piano.
Yeah.
Are you going to teach her piano?
I don't know. If she takes to it, if she wants to learn, yeah. I also hear horror stories about that, how piano teachers never get to teach their own kids because it doesn't work out that way. Mm. And who knows? Like, my dad was big into baseball, and I, when I was a kid, could not have cared less. And my dad, to his full credit, never, ever made me feel guilty for not liking what he liked. So it's now my duty as a father to make sure that my child does not feel some arbitrary obligation to like the things I like. So who knows? She may end up, being a great soccer player. Well, she cheats for that. Who knows? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. That's a good outlook. All right. Well, is that all we have?
That's all I had.
Hmm.
Well, this has been fun. We don't get to see you a lot.
I know.
So.
You'll have to come up to the high school sometime.
Yeah.
I should.
We do have grill club this week, if you want to stop by and
shout out
chef
grill
it up.
Club.
What are you grilling?
I believe duck. We're going to do
wow,
duck tacos and venison burgers.
Y'all got fancy.
Where did the venison burgers come from?
Mr. McClatchy.
Oh.
He just happens to have some.
Oh.
He won't tell me where he got it.
What?
But yeah, this is a fancy week this week, so if you want to stop by,
fancy week,
you'll be more than welcome.
Yeah, what, you might need his cooking expertise.
Yeah, because that's a good thing, is to stand next to a man at a grill and say,
yeah,
you gonna flip that?
Yeah.
think I'm a good enough.
I think I'm a good enough griller to be able to do it on my own. I'll say more so you can just come and enjoy the food. But if you want to teach me how to grill, that's all right.
You know,
did that hurt you to say?
A little bit.
Grilling is not my forte.
Well, how about I teach you how to grill and you can teach me to become a chocolatier?
There you go. It's a deal.
Wow.
Actually, when I went to, the first thing that came to mind when you said is I've been at the Ghirardelli Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yeah?
And when I was there, one of the things that came to mind was I cannot imagine doing this as a job. It was so hot in that room. And it's just, it's so much chocolate.
Is that out in San Francisco?
Yeah, it's in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah, it's if you do it in small quantities, it's a lot of fun. You get to pour chocolate in these molds, and you know, and they come out and they look really cool and all this. But yeah, and you can't even lick
the spoon.
You can't.
That's like the best part.
You know, I worked with somebody at Gigi's who could not stand the smell of melted chocolate. She said it smelled like feet.
Is she from Europe?
I know.
Because I know Europeans have a problem with American chocolate. It's some preservative that we have that tastes like vomit to them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we...
But I don't know why an American would like that.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I'll have to smell melted chocolate.
I think it's one of the five greatest smells in the kitchen.
Yeah. What are the other four?
I don't know. I just came up with that number. I mean, come on. Onion sweating and butter, that's a great smell.
I can't imagine it, but yeah.
You can't smell that right now?
No.
Freshly baked bread, that's a great smell.
Yeah.
What else? Caramel that's being made, not like just caramel, but in a pot, caramel sauce. It's a good smell. And apologies if you're still recording this. Apologies to any vegetarians, but seared meat in a cast iron skillet is a great smell.
I agree. Full heartedly.
Sorry, not sorry.
It's a great smell.
Yep.
Well, this has been very fun.
Great interview.
Yeah.
Well, thank y'all.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk with us. Thank you to our listeners, and until next time.
Peace.